Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Craig Joseph. He is the Chief Medical Officer at Nordic Consulting Partners for our episode on News You Can Use. Craig, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you again for having me.
Today's episode is sponsored by Atlantic.net, the award-winning cloud hosting company trusted with securing critical data for over 25 years. Their industry-leading HIPAA-compliant cloud hosting solutions are backed by a fully audited 100% service-level agreement and a customer satisfaction guarantee. Get started today with your free trial at Atlantic.net. So, Craig, for the purposes of this month's news you can use, I guess the most pressing couple of items that I think are worth talking about, the CDC mask guidance and vaccines. And conferences. Let's start with vaccines and conferences. It's coming up to a season where we might actually have some in-person conferences. In fact, I've got one in my future for next month. AMDIS is potentially in person, and I'm looking forward to that. But HIMSS, which is the biggie, coming up in Las Vegas, one of your hot property towns that you like. Are you going to the conference? Did you see the vaccine news? And what's the story?
Well, I am going, and I also am going to the AMDIS conference. So potentially I will see you in a couple of weeks. And I'm not really sure you're a real person because I haven't seen you in a long time besides through a video screen. So this might be very exciting. As you mentioned, several of the very big, now this AMDIS conference is a very small conference, relatively speaking, with a bunch of geeky doctor type people, which I enjoy.
Being I resemble that remark.
Yeah, I know you do. But you're talking about some very big with tens of thousands of people attending, and HIMSS and the Health Conference, HLTH, Health Conference, both announced that to attend in person, you must prove that you have been vaccinated, fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Looking at social media, I think the preponderance of the audience, of the folks that are going to be going to that, applauded it. And I certainly applaud it. It's going to be great to know that everyone that's in the exhibit hall, everyone that's in the seminars is fully vaccinated. Does it mean that I'm 100% safe? Absolutely not. We know that that's not the case, but we do know that it's highly unlikely that if you're fully vaccinated, you're going to have severe disease or end up in the hospital or die. And so I do think it's great. And I personally am willing to give up the privacy concerns that some have with respect to proving to a group that I'm fully vaccinated. And I think that's appropriate. I understand, because you can tell some, I already know some folks are going to be upset. I understand there are folks who think that that's an invasion of their privacy and that they can't be required to give that information up. And they're right. It is an invasion of their privacy and they can't be required to give that information up. But it also means that the private conference that's being held on a private property doesn't need to admit you. And so those are decisions that they're making. And it's I think, well within their right to make, given the way we understand, how the pandemic has gone and how we anticipate it moving forward. So a lot of words for me basically to say, like, I think it's great. I'm glad they made the decisions and I'm happy to share with them via whatever technology they want, my status with respect to the COVID vaccine.
I agree with you. I mean, I think it's a reasonable ask. I know there are folks, and I certainly can think of folks that believe that that's overstepping the boundaries. But you and I have talked about this before, and this is not a new circumstance. The yellow fever vaccine is a requirement. You have to prove that yellow fever vaccine. And it's done with a paper-based solution that is written in that says you've had the yellow fever vaccine, albeit that's an approved vaccine. Although, interestingly, there was a requirement in my household for having that vaccine, and the approved FDA-approved vaccine is not available. It's in short supply, and the family member had to have one that was not FDA-approved, so because they required it for their particular job. So, but I think my question or challenge, and you know, it's as evidenced with health and HIMSS. Health, I think, has come out and said we're going to use clear system, which is clear as in the airport system. By the way, that doesn't exist. They, I think, they acknowledge that, or at least I that's what I'm aware of. So we're talking.
It absolutely does not exist as of now. It absolutely does not.
Which yep. makes me supremely nervous, given that we've had these vaccine booking systems that cost millions and then didn't do a particularly good job.
Can I just say, as an aside, I actually traveled on an airplane over the weekend, and which was very, very exciting for me. And the clear, I hadn't been at a clear site, obviously, since March in the pre-pandemic time. You just walk up to this machine at the airport, and it has a retina scan that you've given it. And I just looked at the machine for about a second and a half, and it found me. Like, it didn't know who I was and then compare the records. It just, by looking at my eyes, it found me. So my point is, I think Claire seems, from a company standpoint, very able to get their technology in order. But your point's well taken. Health has announced that it's going to be the Clear app, and the Clear app doesn't really exist with respect to this. And I'm very curious, how are they going to do this? So many people got vaccine from so many different sources, and you know, every state has a state immunization registry or multiple state immunization registries, and it's going to be difficult. It's a difficult technological question, because one would assume, again, that your piece of paper is not what they want for proof. They're going to want digital proof.
It reminds me of a problem that I don't know. I'm scratching my head. I think it was a big problem in one industry somewhere, interoperability or something. They seem to have this challenge that just, you know, data was not shared. There was no standards.
Nobody if you're an ATM, it works great, but it doesn't work.
It wasn't banking. No, that's
no.
Right.
I think you might be referring to healthcare. You might be referring to healthcare. Yeah, yeah. So we do have a problem. You know, how are these apps going to figure out? Again, assuming that the piece of paper that we all have and we treasure, and I know I've scanned it and taken three pictures of it just to make sure I always have it, that's useless. I'm assuming that that's not going to be good enough proof, because it's so clearly and easily faked. So, you know, going to the source, either from the electronic health record of the health system that administered it, or, you know, if you went through CVS or Walgreens or one of the big systems that way, you know, it's digitally there. How do we get that information out and into an app? That's complicated, hard stuff. Interoperability is very difficult. So yeah, I think it'll be fun. My main point I want to emphasize is I'm glad I don't have to do that job.
Well, and I think you raise an interesting point with Clear. Let's be frank. I mean, they're doing that from a airline security standpoint. And I have to believe that they're validating against a central registry of recorded individuals to be able to validate and securing that information, because we're talking about biometrics. So yep. I think they have a good chance. But then I've heard of other large companies that, you know, do stuff really well, who tried to step into a healthcare arena. And let's be clear, vaccination feels very healthcare-ish, and struggled. So
yeah,
jury's out. We'll watch. But I, you know, reasonable behavior. If you're not vaccinated, you're not coming to HIMSS. And I think that's also, or not being allowed into the various things. So maybe there's going to be an outer conference of non-vaccinated individuals. I don't know. But I'm looking forward to going. I'm looking forward to seeing people. I have the privilege of having been vaccinated, and excited to explore that. So moving on, let's talk about the CDC, because they obviously went to the School of Brief Change Management and said, okay, we're just going to swing this way and say no more masking required. Thoughts?
Yeah, well, again, I emphasize I'm glad I'm not having to do that job. they were in a bad position where they wanted to get information out very quickly, and they wanted to make it science-based and you know, buried in lots of evidence, so that if folks had questions, they could look at the source information. And so they got that information out very quickly. To your point, from a change management standpoint, it was horrible. And you would have wanted to prepare a lot more, plan a lot more about how you're going to get this information out, what specific recommendations various interest groups you could give to them. For instance, employers. Hey, you know, you've got 10 or 10,000 or a million employees. What does this mean to you? And so, and you know, you just said masks are no longer required. Well, that's not what they said, actually, right? What they said was, if you're fully vaccinated, unless you're in under these certain circumstances, meaning planes, trains, buses, those kinds of things, masks are not required for you. But that doesn't change anything for folks that are not fully vaccinated. And by fully vaccinated, we mean 2 weeks after your final dose, or 2 weeks after your first dose, your only dose, if you were getting the vaccine that only requires one, the J&J. So yeah, I was glad to see it. I thought that they were overly conservative. People who are much smarter than me from a public health perspective had been pushing for weeks for the CDC to say, hey, you know, the risks are so low that you're being overly cautious. And so, you know, we all deal with risk in our life every day. We make certain allowances. I've given Clear the company, I've given them my fingerprints, right? I've given them other biometric information on me. That's a risk I'm willing to take in order to get the convenience and the benefits from it. So long story short, I think it was great. I think that I'm glad they did it. I understand the problem that they had in trying to get it out quickly, but it did cause a lot of confusion. It's still confusing. And ultimately, every organization, whether it be a county health department or a small employer, they have to figure out what they're going to do.
Right. And all of this is going to break down in some complex ways. For those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Craig Joseph. He is the chief medical officer at Nordic Consulting. He joins me each month on News You Can Use. Just a reminder on today's sponsor, get started with your free trial at Atlantic.net, the simple solution for your HIPAA compliance and cloud hosting needs. We were just talking about the CDC mask compliance unmasking compliance that basically came out. And Craig, you rightly pointed out, you don't have to wear a mask. There is a series of conditions, but certainly the interpretation has been challenging the change management. If I was to sort of be charitable about this, as I always try to be, I think, you know, the question always remains, at what point would it have been okay to say, right, we can say masks off? I think the CDC has run this balancing act. They've had this pendulum, and you highlighted it. One of my guests that's coming up, Marty McCary, will be talking about this and the challenge with the over-conservative nature of CDC. And it feels like somebody goes, wow, we've really got to show these people we're not conservative. But equally, I would say, you know, we reached some level, and I know I can't say what it is today, but I know certainly it's over 50% of the population in the US has had at least one dose, is my understanding, and some smaller proportion of that have had two doses or considered fully. So we're not at any level where numbers have been cited for this all evasive herd immunity, which is only truly understood in hindsight. So we can never say with certainty, yes, we've reached herd immunity, but we are seeing huge declines in cases, in intensive care use, bed usage, ventilator usage, all these places where they've actually tracked all this information. And if it was good enough, or, you know, appears it's heading in the right direction, what is then the line? And I think in some respects, it's a reward, right? Where everybody's done the right things, you know, and also potentially some cajoling, influencing type activity to say, hey, if you're not vaccinated, you really have to still follow these procedures. But if you are vaccinated now, you've got some additional freedoms. That's a little bit of the carrot in my mind. So I'm in favor of it. I've spent a lot of time explaining this and, you know, dealing with the challenges. I think the principle underneath this, as you highlighted, is to me, very clear. If you've been vaccinated, you are both protected if you're, you know, from exposure. And if you do get exposed, you don't get severe disease, as we've seen in a couple of studies out of Israel. And importantly, you don't spread it. So the virus doesn't show up in the nasopharynx and pharynx, and you're not shedding high quantities of the virus load, which is, you know, we talk about IDD, infected dose deposited, or infected deposited dose, which is a measure of the amount of virus that gets shed and you're exposed to. So all of that to me adds up to, well, this is reasonable. And at some point, we have to return to some level of normality. So I'm good with that. I think it's, you know, it's good news, albeit it's going to create some confusion. So moving on, scripts, ransomware, they're apparently still down 2 weeks later. Have you had experience in all your IT dealings with challenges of ransomware? Is this a problem that we're going to see more and more of, do you think?
Well, I have not personally dealt with ransomware, but you know, it's a huge problem, and it's highly profitable and relatively easy to do. You don't have to be a computer science guru to do this. You certainly have to know a lot about computers, but my understanding is you can evil actors can easily get access to some of the technology that's required. And all it takes is one person at your organization to do the wrong thing. And usually it's almost always, I shouldn't say almost, it's always accidental. Someone clicks on something that they probably shouldn't have. And maybe it was obvious, maybe it wasn't obvious. But that combined with software that is either not updated typically or not configured the way it optimally should allows the bad doer in. And typically what they do is scramble all of your data with a code and then tell you if you want to get the code to get all your data back, it's going to cost you a lot of money. And so with the ability of getting that money via Bitcoin, which can't be traced, or certainly can't be easily traced.
I'm going to stop there and say, actually, you know, I think that's a little bit of a misnomer. And, you know, one of the services actually, and it happened in the last week or so, one of the services in the Bitcoin world was a money laundering system. So Bitcoin, you know, it's an irrefutable record that ultimately should be able to tie back to individuals. Now, you can conceal and it's not tied to a banking system. So there is some ability, but it's not quite the anonymous system that everybody believes it to be. And certainly people have been caught by their associations with Bitcoins and an individual that set up a whole business that was essentially throw all your money into this big tumbler and I'll mix it all up and then redistribute it. And that's one of the techniques of shielding. So yes, that's true, but I think it's more of a convenience. It's a bit like PayPal. It's just, hey, this is an easy way to pay me $3 million. Just send me the Bitcoin.
Well, I wish you would have told me about this before. Now I feel like I'm, no. All right. Well, be that as it may, and you certainly know more about this than I do. Ransomware is easy to do, and it's easy to get the money back, and you just have to be persistent, it seems. And so crime is not supposed to pay. When crime does pay, you're going to see more crime.
And you're right. It's big business. If you looked at piece on that sort of did the expose on, it's a huge business. I mean, they have massive teams of people that are focused on this. So, you know, having a single security officer is oftentimes insufficient to sort of cope and deal with this. And, you know, you are the weakest link. I mean, that's one of my blog posts that I posted a long time back. You know, unfortunately, this boils down to the individuals. And, you know, I just got a phishing exercise in one of my emails that was designed to test me out. Now, I'm super suspicious, but not everybody is. And, you know, even when you're super suspicious, you can still get caught out because they do what's termed spear phishing. So they pick things that they know you'll look at, oh, that makes sense. I should be receiving this, and click on it. And, you know, so a huge challenge, but, you know, here's an institution that is essentially down, and, you know, I know they're struggling, although there's very little information coming out. We got a few minutes left. I wanted to just briefly talk about the Medically Home, that big investment on the part of Mayo and Kaiser. We don't know how much, but there's certainly substantial amounts of money that essentially is in this investment vehicle that is trying to put healthcare into the home. So putting resources and having you at home versus coming into the hospital. All sorts of economic implications because we've set up hospitals and the payment streams to work that way. But from a clinical standpoint, have you had any experience of that?
A bit. You know, this concept of hospital at home, which is what we're talking about, it's a little different than what most of us have experienced in telehealth, you know, talking to a doctor over the computer. These are sick people who typically would be in a big building with doctors and nurses and respiratory therapists and dietitians and all those folks. And the idea is, of course, can some of those less sick, still very sick, but less sick patients be managed in their own house? And can you do that safely? How do you give them IV antibiotics? How do you do monitoring and that sort of thing? And to some extent, it's clearly technology related. You know, I need to be able to monitor them and watch them and see their vital signs. I need them to be able to get on scales so we can check weights and those. But there's also a big organizational perspective, right? You still are going to need folks to go out to their homes fairly frequently, most likely daily, to check on everything and make sure everything's going well. But the benefits are huge. And if you can do it safely, and some have shown that they can, and a lot of that's picking the right patients, right? Who are the patients that are likely to thrive at home? And then making sure you have the right safety measures in place and quality measures so you can ensure that they're getting the same outcomes that they would have gotten in the hospital. It's so much better as a patient to be in your own home and not be woken up by noises from other folks or machines. And it's cheaper, so much cheaper in the long run. So lots of benefits to all involved parties if they can make it work.
And you know, it's interesting you bring up it's better in the home. Our cat recently had to go and see the vet. It was necessary. And like a human, what happened? She ended up getting a cold when she came back. And I can only believe, because she hasn't had one in years, that she got that in the veterinary practice. And I think that's the same problem. So another good reason for all of this telehealth is to prevent that. From a technology standpoint, I agree with you, all the supporting services, but here's a call out on technology. And Dr. Jane featured this in her blog, and I thought it was kind of interesting. She was having to measure her blood pressure, something I do at home with a manual blood pressure machine, and I enter it in and track it far better in terms of resources. But she spent a considerable amount of time just connecting this device because it was supposed to be quick and easy. And I think that's one of the critical elements of this sort of digital health promotion, that we have to make things as easy as the iPhone. So I would always cite my mother when she was still alive. If she could use it, then it was, valid. Ultimately, she did get it working, but by the time she got it working, she had a headache. So I'm not sure that technology worked. And if I had a recommendation for her, I'd say pick the most simple version of this, which Actilia has come out with a blood pressure monitor that looks like a Fitbit watch, uses the same principles of plethysmography, and is a continuous monitor that you can just essentially wear. Very exciting, very simple. Put it on, connect it to your device, and you're up and ready and going. Unfortunately, she's going to have to get some friend who lives in another country in Europe, because it's authorized there. You can't buy it in the US because the FDA hasn't approved it, but hopefully they will. But there you go. For me, exciting scope, and the fact that the Mayo and Kaiser is investing in that makes a tremendous amount of sense. I think we're going to see more of this. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, I'd just like to thank our episode sponsor today, Atlantic.net. Keeping your focus on the patient is essential, and having the wrong cloud service plan can be costly. Start your free trial of HIPAA compliance cloud hosting today at Atlantic.net. Just remains for me to thank you as usual, Craig. Always a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you IRL, as they say, in a few weeks' time.
Excellent.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.